Back in 2019, the nation's first major trial over the opioid crisis landed squarely in favor of plaintiffs, arguing that a drug maker knowingly caused harm. A district judge in Oklahoma ruled against Johnson & Johnson and fined the company hundreds of millions of dollars. Now that case has been overturned by the state's Supreme Court, which doesn't bode well for other challenges in states around the country under similar laws. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you think manufacturers and distributors of opioid prescription drugs should be held responsible for the opioid addiction crisis? What about doctors or pharmacies that distribute opioids? What questions do you have about the many court challenges going on right now? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Lenny Bernstein is a health and medicine reporter at the Washington Post. He's been covering the opioid epidemic for years now. Lenny, welcome back to Central Time.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Well, back in 2019, you were reporting, Lenny, on this case in Oklahoma. It was a big deal. Talk us through that case and why it was seen as something with a lot of implications nationwide.
Sure. That was the first state trial, really the first trial of any kind in a very long time, where plaintiffs tried to put the responsibility for all the damage of the opioid epidemic onto the drug companies that had produced the opioids that many people took for pain. It started out with many companies, and gradually through settlements and other pretrial motions, it became just Johnson & Johnson, the giant health company. And so it was closely watched around the country because, A, they were taking on a very large drug company and trying to get some kind of recompense for all the overdose deaths and all the other kinds of damage. And also it was a very creative use of a new law.
And talk about the law. This is a public nuisance law, as I understand it, that that Johnson & Johnson was challenged under.
Right. So every state has these public nuisance laws. And the way to think about them is if someone in your neighborhood is doing something that harms the general good in that neighborhood, that is what public nuisance laws have been used for traditionally over many years. So if you've got the guy in your neighborhood who plays his music at 2 a.m. and keeps up everybody for blocks around, he can be determined to be a public nuisance, and he can be prosecuted for that. What the plaintiffs did, the state of Oklahoma in this case, was they used that very old law in a very new way, and they said Johnson & Johnson and other drug companies had created a public nuisance by pouring opioids into the community and then deceptively marketing them in ways that were harmful. And so we have suffered overdoses and we have suffered deaths, and the cops have to come and the government has to pay for naloxone, which is the antidote that counteracts overdoses. There are education efforts. All of these things at least are partly the responsibility of the producers of these opioids.
Have we seen public nuisance suits in other states following suit, I guess, of what we saw in Oklahoma?
Yes, there actually was one that predated Oklahoma, but it was decided just the other day. It was decided much later. And that was in California, where three counties and the city of Oakland did the same thing. And they sued a handful of drug companies. It ended up being four, I believe, under the same theory. Pretty much under the exact same circumstances. And then other states are using this theory as well. New York, Ohio, there's a West Virginia case against distributors that is before a judge now. In other words, the testimony has finished and the judge is considering his ruling. So yes, you're seeing them still going on in this country. And there were thousands and thousands of other cases that were filed, but have not come to trial and may actually be part of this gigantic mass settlement that also is in process right now.
Now, this Oklahoma public nuisance suit worked originally in one court, and I think that made a lot of people think it could work in other states. But now here we are this week. The Oklahoma State Supreme Court overturned that ruling. What did they say about that decision?
The Supreme Court said several things, but the main one is this. They said Johnson & Johnson is producing a legal, highly regulated product and sending it downstream into the community where some people, many people, are using it for the legitimate reason of addressing pain. How can Johnson & Johnson be held responsible for what happens to that product as it moves downstream through the hands of distributors and pharmacists and doctors? And by the way, it's legal and highly regulated. Why should they be responsible? Why should they be accused of creating a public nuisance with their perfectly legal product? And it was a 5-1 decision, and the dissenter only dissented because he thought the case should be sent back to the trial court level. So, in effect, you know, this was an overwhelming decision on behalf of the drug company, for the drug company.
We're talking to Lenny Bernstein with the Washington Post, looking at lawsuits involving drug manufacturers and distributors related to the opioid epidemic. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you agree with that court decision we just heard about, a state Supreme Court in Oklahoma saying it's a legal product, don't hold manufacturers responsible for the downstream impact? Or do you agree with plaintiffs in cases like these that there was deceptive marketing, deception about the addictive properties of these medications? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. Lenny, that's Oklahoma. You mentioned that big lawsuit. I think you're talking about the one that the state of Wisconsin is part of, involving a bunch of drug, not just manufacturers, but distributors as well. What's going on there, and where is it right now?
There is a multi-district litigation involving thousands of plaintiffs, literally thousands of plaintiffs. There are states, counties, cities, Native American tribes, other jurisdictions, and they have all tentatively agreed to settle their case against the three big drug distributors, McKesson, Cardinal, and AmerisourceBergen, for $21 billion. And separately but connected, against Johnson & Johnson for $5 billion. And many of them have pursued this public nuisance strategy. Well, as you can pretty much see very clearly, if you're on the fence, if you're one of those counties that hadn't ratified the settlement yet, or one of those states that hasn't ratified the settlement yet, and you're seeing what happened over the last 10 days in which public nuisance was struck down in two separate jurisdictions, you might want to sign on to that settlement right now. You might say, you know, it didn't look as good as it did a year ago or 2 years ago when Oklahoma won $465 million and had this nice pot of money to help abate the opioid crisis. And maybe we ought to sign on and get what we can get right now. So while state decisions, even though this was the Supreme Court of Oklahoma and a lower district court in California, while state decisions are not binding on other states, lawyers do watch to see which way things are trending. And if other judges come out and say, this theory doesn't work, you can't apply this to drug companies, then it may have some influence on that settlement.
I want to talk about the distributors in this. The manufacturers are maybe household names. The McKessons and Cardinals, except for those of us who used to work in pharmacies, not household names. Some of the specific claims involve I think accusations that they were distributing these drugs kind of willy-nilly, not paying attention to the ways that they were diverted into the black market. Can you talk about that angle of the story?
Sure. These are three. There are several hundred or maybe 100 distributors, but the big three control 85 or 90% of the market. And these are the biggest companies that you've never heard of. Mm-hmm. McKesson is something around the fifth largest company in America, and Cardinal and AmerisourceBergen are close behind. The law that created the closed system for prescription opioids, the 1972, I believe it was, put the onus for controlling these drugs, the flow of these drugs, squarely on the distributors. And that makes sense because the manufacturers pass them on to the distributors. Distributors pass them on to the doctors, nursing homes, pharmacies that that sell them to you and me. Well, so they are sort of gatekeepers. They have their – they're in the middle of the supply chain, and they can see what's going on. Well, what happened over many years, again and again and again, is that they kind of turned their heads when there was clear evidence of malfeasance or wrongdoing. So if a pharmacy was ordering 10,000 oxycodone 1 month and then 100,000 oxycodone the next month, and to be clear, I'm making up those numbers, that is clear evidence of a suspicious order. And what the distributors were supposed to do was hold back the drugs, report it to the DEA, get it checked out, make sure this wasn't a rogue pharmacist who was selling drugs for cash to people who use drugs. And in many cases, they didn't do that. And so they turned out that a lot of these guys were not doing their jobs, and they had to settle with the DEA, which came in and prosecuted them. And now, as I as mentioned before, they also were sued and are part of this larger settlement.
We're talking to Washington Post health and medicine reporter Lenny Bernstein about the ongoing opioid crisis and the reversal of a major court ruling that had originally held a company liable in one state. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts on these suits and whether the companies that manufactured the opioids and marketed them, the companies that distributed them, should be held liable, should have to pay communities money for the damage that was done by the addiction crisis. You could join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation, maybe hear from you, coming up on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Barrett. We're picking up our talk with Washington Post health and medicine reporter Lenny Bernstein about the reversal of a 2019 landmark ruling against a drug maker for their role in the opioid crisis. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think of these lawsuits against drug manufacturers and distributors over opioid drugs? Did you see a big impact of this opioid crisis in your community, in your family? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Let's go to your calls now. Steve is with us in Madison. Steve, hi.
Hello.
Hi, Steve. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Yes. As I've been listening to this comments about the opioid crisis and, you know, the drug makers and such, and I believe the drug companies, I think, knew about the addiction of these drugs, and the continual use of these drugs would be harmful in the long term, meaning as you use these drugs, the prescription dosage goes up, your body gets used to it, and your body needs it, and sometimes your body goes into a state where, well, you go into depression, you can't work, you have to be on the drug, you don't want to be on the drug, there again causes more depression, anxieties, and I just believe that, I have a daughter that's involved with this, and it's hard on the families all the way around, not only on the person that's addicted to these drugs. But I think, I don't know that I hold the doctors responsible. Yeah, well, I guess if they knew that it was addictive, they should have possibly draw back on the amount of usage on these drugs. But as far as a person, when you're in pain, you know, you want to use something and go forward. But I just believe that these companies knew all these opioids were addictive.
Steve, thanks so much for sharing your story. Best to your family and your daughter. Lenny, this is kind of a core issue, right? What did drug companies know about the addictive properties of these medications versus what they were telling doctors about the addictive properties of these medications?
Yeah, And to your caller, I think his name was Steve. I'm really sorry to hear this story. I've interviewed many, many, many people who have expressed the same thing. Early on in the epidemic, it became clear to some of the drug companies that they were aware of the addictive some of the drug companies that these products were highly addictive. Now, you've probably seen enough about the Purdue story in recent movies and books to know that they have been accused, and in some cases settled cases, in which they went out and very aggressively denied the addictive properties of these drugs. They twisted a research letter from a medical journal and convinced many doctors at a time when we were trying as a society to better address pain that these drugs could be used for moderate pain, some kinds of daily aches and pains. That's not what they're for. These are powerful, powerful drugs, and they're supposed to be used for cancer pain, for end-of-life pain, and that's not what happened. They were deceptively marketed in many cases as being perfectly safe for pain that's of other kinds, much more beyond just those severe pains. And some people have brain chemistry that addicts them to these drugs very, very quickly. I've interviewed people who said, you know, I took my kid for a soccer injury, a shoulder, a dislocation, and within a few days, that kid was hooked. And as your caller mentioned, you know, this is not what those drugs were for, and you become dependent, and it gets very hard to get off of them.
Steve, thanks again for calling and sharing your story. Lenny, I want to talk about the current state of the opioid addiction crisis. In a lot of ways, it seems like we moved on. Maybe people who originally got addicted to a prescription medication, one that's prescribed for them, are off the black market. That seems less common, and we're moving on more toward these full-on illegal drugs, often imported from overseas. What are you seeing now?
Yeah, we talk about the opioid epidemic in this country in three phases. There was the prescription drug phase in the early 2000s, where very little was being done as these drugs sort of poured over the internet and into pharmacies, and people could get their hands on them, and some people became addicted. The DEA cracked down on that. The epidemic moved into heroin. It was cheaper. It got the same, people got the same high out of it. But of course, we all know the problems with heroin. And then now fentanyl was introduced, illegal fentanyl, not medical fentanyl, which has a real use in medicine, but illegal synthesized fentanyl was introduced into this country. It's many, many more times addictive than morphine. And it is the main problem now in 2021, has been for several years. The last report we have, the last full year report we have from the government, from the CDC, is 93,000 people died of overdoses to drugs in this country, and about two-thirds of those were opioids. That's a staggering, staggering number. Of course, the COVID pandemic has had an impact on it. And we always have to remember that for each death, there are family members left behind. In other cases, there were overdoses that didn't result in death, but still had grave damage on the person and their family. So this is a huge crisis in the United States. And unfortunately, it is only getting worse.
Bringing things back around to these lawsuits now, Lenny, was the goal, as these settlements come in, as the suits came out, to take this money and then use it to help treat people, to provide more options, more roads for people to get unaddicted?
Exactly right. You, under public nuisance law, you can't make someone pay for previous damage, right? You can't make someone pay for keeping all of us up at night with their loud music or whatever the nuisance was. But you can make them pay to abate the damage. So in the case of drugs, well, of course, we can't pay for the past overdoses, but what we can do is take their money, put it into treatment, put it into distribution of naloxone, that's the opioid antidote, the overdose antidote. We can put it into clean needles. We can put it into education. We can put it into all the ancillary services that go along with treatment and prevention. And that was the idea. And in fact, when the state won $465 million from Johnson & Johnson, there was a whole list of how that money was going to be spent in the state of Oklahoma. Now, of course, that won't happen, but it remains to be seen what happens in other places.
In just our last minute or so, Lenny, what are you watching for next in these ongoing lawsuits and settlement negotiations?
Well, I'm watching to make sure that enough counties and states sign on to the settlement that it goes through, and so that most of the cases will be taken care of. I'm watching to see what the next round of decisions are from judges, and if it keeps going in the company's favor, I think that will have an impact on the way things go. And then waiting to see the first jury. There hasn't been a jury decision yet, so will 12 jurors see this differently than individual judges?
Where is a jury trial in the works that you have your eye on?
New York.
All right. Lenny, we'll keep watching. Thanks for joining us again today. I appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Talking to Lenny Bernstein, health and medicine reporter at the Washington Post. He's been covering the opioid epidemic, as we heard, for years now. He talked to us about the reversal of a major state ruling against the drug company Johnson & Johnson. It had been the original ruling a couple years back was viewed as maybe a big precedent, and now so is the reversal of that rule.